You ready, Shawnee?
It's a project. Yeah.
Can you show me that fishing video
some
today?
Very powerful duck people in his office.
I
want
to hear Roger.
You guys ready? Okay, we're going to call the commission meeting to order. My name's Jim Kellogg. I'm president of the commission from Concord. To my left is Bob Trainer, our executive director for the commission. And left of Bob is our brand spanking new commissioner, Cindy Gustafson from Tahoe City.
Hi.
Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you.
And left of Cindy is Commissioner Richard Rogers from Carpinteria. And on my right is Vice President of the Commission, Michael Flores from Sacramento. And then hobbling up in the middle of the room is Commissioner Bob Hattori from Santa Monica. We also have with us today John Fisher, our Assistant Executive Director for the Commission, and Sherry Cole, Commission staff. From the Department, we have Paul Stein, our Chief Deputy Director, Sonke Master, Deputy of Director of Wildlife and Inland Fisheries. Ed Pert will probably be here a little bit, Chief of Fisheries, and we have John Carlson, Chief of Wildlife, with us today. I don't see any of the wardens.
Our turn.
Yeah. I have to pass right over our most important person that keeps the rest of the commissioners out of trouble, our legal counsel, Bill Cunningham, from the Attorney General's office. And with that, I'll turn it over to Director Trainer for our first item on today's agenda.
Thank you, Mr. President. Our first item this morning is to report out of executive session, item 12. We did not have an executive session yesterday, but Mr. Cunningham would like to make some remarks at this time.
Mr. President, members of the Commission, Bill Cunningham, Deputy Attorney General. As Mr. Trainer pointed out, we did not have an executive session yesterday, but what I would ask the Commission to do today would be to continue that single agenda item, the executive session itself, to a date to be determined hopefully by the end of today's meeting, and I would suggest during the week of July 11th through July about 14th. I do have potentially up to 11, at least 10, perhaps 11 decisions that I will have for the Commission at that time, and I do think it important that we at least have an executive session to resolve some of our licensing and permitting matters before our next commission meeting, which will not be until the middle of August. So we are going to have some people who are going to be waiting with bated breath for some resolution, and I would hope that we can find some time for them here in the middle of July. So, Mr. President, with your permission, I'd like to ask the commissioners to consider some time during that week as a possible telephonic appearance on the continued agenda item for executive session.
Yeah, I got a motion.
Second.
We did that in a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Now, be the order.
Thank you, sir.
We'll have a phone call?
We'll do a phone call.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Executive session.
Our next item is opening of bids and awarding a lease for kelp bed number 223 in San Mateo County. The commission has received an application from Mr. Doug Hayes on March 1st, 2005. The appropriate legal notice had been published, alerting the public that the that kelp bed number 223 was being proposed to be leased. To my knowledge, we have not received any competing bids, and the department recommends that we go ahead and lease the kelp bed number 223 to Mr. Doug Hayes. We have one individual from the audience that would like to comment on this item. Mr. Weakland.
Of course.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. We would hope that the leasing of this kelp bed will not eliminate any fishing or diving activities in there. A lot of times people take over these leases and then feel this is their private property, trying to keep the public out of these areas. This is not acceptable. And the monies that are derived to the state are nominal for the uses of these kelp beds, which are traditionally harvested for aquaculture, which still no answers have been given to the questions that have been asked about the aquaculture, the procedures, and the harvesting of these kelp beds. Thank you.
Any questions from the commissioners?
Move we accept the lease.
Okay, I got a motion and a second to accept the bid. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Now bid order.
Thank you. Our next item is item 14, consideration of the 2005-2006 California Duck Stamp and Ducks Unlimited Marsh projects. The department provided their proposed projects in a memo dated June 1st, 2005. Commissioners have a copy of that memo and the proposed projects. I believe Mr. Carlson is available to address any questions the commission may have regarding awarding these projects.
Go ahead, John. Give us an update.
Okay. Basically, this year, our spending authority remains at $1.066 million. And no problem. After deducting the required administrative overhead costs of $66,000 and a mandated amount that goes to Canada, which is $146,000, we had a total of $853,000 remaining for available new and ongoing projects. And your attachment gives a rundown on all those projects. I also want to note that Ducks Unlimited Marsh Program were providing $114,000 additional money to match the duck stamp dedicated accounts on certain projects. And those are listed, this attachment. And you'll see on these projects, some of them, we'll have a paragraph that talks about additional money from Ducks Unlimited, and that's what we're talking about. That totals up to about $114,000. Are there any questions on any of the specific projects? Or
any questions or comments from the commission?
I have a quick one. The WIT project in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
What are the protection measures? I think in the other items, usually it explained what the measures were. And being new to the commission, I wasn't sure what
this,
protection measures would be used.
This project is it's a new project that going on this year, and I don't know the exact protection measures. I believe what they're doing here.
It's fine. You can get back
don't
to
know
me.
You
right.
Don't know, John.
Right. No,
totally
I believe
supportive.
I believe this
I just
one
want for my information. To
right.
Know what they were doing.
We work closely with Canada on these northern projects to protect nesting ground and nesting habitat, and it pays off big because the majority of those waterfowl are wintering here in California every year. So these protection projects are aimed at protecting nesting habitat.
Great.
If you need more detail, I can get more later. But
that's fine.
Any others? Okay, I'll make a motion that the commission approve the department's request for the 0506 California Duck Stamp
Second.
And Ducks Unlimited Marsh Projects.
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Now bid order.
Next item is consideration of request by Scripps Research Institute in UC San Diego to add a transgenic zebra fish to their restricted species list for biomedical research purposes. Commissioners have a copy of the department's memo and recommendation in support of these two changes. Dr. Ed Pert, chief of the department's inland fisheries program branch, will provide the department's overview and recommendation, and we have one individual from the audience that would like to comment on this item.
Good morning, commissioners. As at least many of you know, transgenic aquatic animals require commission approval to be permitted under law, and we've received a couple of recent requests for permits, one by the University of California, San Diego, the other by Scripps Research Institute. These are both bona fide research institutes as defined by law. Both of these institutions have agreed to abide by the security and containment measures outlined in the regulation, and they will be used for biomedical research, and the department recommends approving these permits.
Any comments or questions? I just want to make sure everybody understands that I voted against this fish being sold in stores and stuff, but I at the time said that I didn't have a problem with it being used in these major colleges for research, and so.
No, I think that's the way we set it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember
we set it up specifically so.
Fish in the aquarium.
Right.
Impact the rest. Mm. If that were
right. Yeah, and keep in mind that we and you all crafted the regulation so that there are adequate security and containment measures for all of these institutions that are right. going to have these fish, right. And I think that this certainly falls under the guidelines so that we outlined.
Yeah. So moved.
We got a public comment.
Thank you. I think I know.
Mr. Weeklin.
Commissioners, if you indulge me, 8 copies.
Paul Weeklin. History has shown us that the Scripps Institution Oceanography and the University of California have failed in their public trust responsibilities over and over and over. Now, I've handed you an article from the Los Angeles Times that talks about the researchers admit lapses in ethics. Well, we're all well aware of that. And I also added a little thing about the governor of Massachusetts declaring an emergency for the shellfish harvesters and trying to get them compensation and Small Business Administration loans for the devastating thing that happened to their fishery. Unlike the state of California and the Fish and Game Commission, who just take away fisheries and do nothing to compensate the fishermen. I'd also like to point out that this article on the researchers is scathing, because not very many of the researchers even responded. And they admit to manufacturing of data, manipulating data, misinterpreting data to fit their opinions. It is a terrible and shameful thing. Now, these genetically altered species, we know that there is a mechanism in nature that when there's too much genetic diversity, it creates large, massive kills, die-offs. It has contaminated the gene pool and the genetic reservoir. It hampers propagation and spawning. The nature is trying to cleanse and purify itself of these genetically altered species and hybrids from the hatcheries. But our researchers and our aquaculture, and no one wants to admit this, even though we have been taught this lesson many times, you don't want us to learn. It is a shameful and terrible thing. Now, also, I've handed in a paper that was produced in 1997 that has never been responded to. It has dropped through the cracks. Legislation has superseded anything that ever came from the first document on abalone. And to date, you have still not answered many of the persistent and lingering questions about aquaculture and the University of Scripps oceanography and their lapse of ethics. They are the ones that created the withering syndrome and outplanted it into the wild with the help of the Fish and Game. But still, we're never going to talk about the truth, are we? The truth will always be swept under the carpet because there is no honor, integrity, or accountability. What these genetically altered fish, all it takes is one disgruntled student, and what we would have if it is let go in the environment is ecological sabotage, environmental terrorism. It's crimes against nature to be doing this. Look at all the failures and mistakes that the Scripps Institution of Oceanography and the University of California have done. Well, you don't hear about their mistakes. You don't hear about their failures because they purge those from the records. They eliminate that and destroy the evidence. It is shameful. And you have all of these rules in place, but if they're not followed, which history proves out, they do not, because there is always more unexpected problems. They will never admit to it, and it is shameful, it's despicable, and to continue these kind of things is not taking proper public responsibility for the resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weeklin.
Okay, I got a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Now be the order.
Our next item is receipt of public recommendations and request for authorization to publish notice of commission intent to consider amendments of the migratory game bird or waterfowl regulations for 2005-2006. Note that the commission will consider adoption of any amendments to the waterfowl regulations at its August 19th meeting in San Luis Obispo. I believe Mr. Carlson will be providing an update for the commission on the federal framework. I'll just point out that when it comes to waterfowl hunting, since they're migratory species, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service sets what's called the federal framework for which the commission must consider amendments to its waterfowl regulations. The states can be more restrictive. They can't be more liberal than the federal framework. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you. As Mr. Traynor stated, we are in the middle of working with the Fish and Wildlife Service on federal framework for this upcoming waterfowl season, and needed information on that framework won't be decided upon until early August by the Fish and Wildlife Service. So what we're presenting here today are proposals we're putting forward, but some of these proposals, the majority of them, have to work through the federal process, and we'll have more information for you on how that turns out at the August meeting and subsequent prior to that meeting. I'll just go over the five proposals that we put forward to you in our initial statement. One is to remove the Sacramento Valley East Special Management Area and allow the take of Canada geese in that area during the balance of the season, balance of the state zone goose season. The second one is to remove the Imperial County Special Management Area and eliminate special hunting season for white geese in that area. Our third proposal is increase the white goose daily bag limit in all zones from 3 to 4, which results in an increase of overall goose daily bag limit in the northeastern California, southern San Joaquin Valley, and balance of the state zones. Our fourth proposal is to increase the small Canada goose daily bag limit to 4 in the northeastern California, southern San Joaquin Valley, and balance of the state zones. And our fifth is to, basically it's our providing the range of possible season lengths from 0 to 107 days for the general duck season and 0 to 100 days for the general goose season. And that gives us that's the maximum that the framework can go through with the Fish and Wildlife Service. And like I said, we'll need to wait till early August to hear that. Right now we're optimistic that the weather conditions up on the northern prairies, the amount of moisture they've gotten this year, the amount of moisture we've gotten here in California, we're optimistic that the breeding birds are doing very well, but we numbers aren't all in, and there's certain areas where some of the rain up north didn't start till later in the nesting season, so we still have to do some surveys before we'll have those numbers that the Fish and Wildlife Service will use in their calculations. Any questions?
Any questions or comments from the commission? And John, thank you for that report. We always have to go through these motions and wait till the feds set the real guidelines for us. But I think we have public comment on this issue before
right. We
want to get into our comments.
That's the whole idea from what.
Our first speaker will be Betty Winholtz, followed by Eric Greening.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Betty Winholtz. I'm a member of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay. I'm here today to bring to your attention a letter that we passed at our last City Council meeting in reference to the hunting only on Morro Bay. In January of 2005, 6 months ago, we were petitioned by the public to ask for restrictions on the bay. We said that we would be interested in looking at that if there was more information and a demonstration of public support. This past month in June, 6 months later, we had been given a lot of information. Probably you've received a packet as well. And monthly, in a sense, updates or reports about information on this issue. In addition, our city council meeting was heavily attended and heavily in favor of the restrictions. So I'm here to point out to you in this letter that we're asking, if we could, that you would restrict the number of hunting days to 3. during the week, keep the same number of days or the same perimeters, and that we ask that you would consider moving the southern bound, or what would be your northern boundary, are of there's a piece of there's an island called Grassy Islands where a variety, all varieties of birds hang out and feed and nest and rejuvenate here. Those that are hunted, all varieties that are hunted, as well as those that are not. And this boundary line is kind of a fuzzy thing, and it's actually also our city boundary. So the residents and the people in Los Osos and those that come to have other kinds of recreation than hunting are concerned that this is bordering on hunting coming into the city limits. So what we're asking is that that limit, that line be moved just south of Grassy Island so there is no confusion. So all users will feel comfortable and know exactly where the boundaries are, and so all users in their different ways can enjoy the bay. And that's the main point of our request. Thank you.
I have some questions.
Ready?
Are there any safety concerns? I mean, are there any reported incidences or that you can point to that would...
In our letter, I think we talk about safety, we talk about the biology, and we talk about the economics. The safety, we received a number of testimony at the meeting the other day of people that have had... and this is from people in Los Osos, primarily because the hunting boundary goes all the way up to their shores, that they've had a bird with shot in it in their yard. There's people that came that are kayakers that have had shot fall around them as they're kayaking. Mm-hmm. Probably the most dramatic testimony was of a docent at the Museum of Natural History who spoke of doing a tour with a group of elementary school children, and while they were there looking out over a bay, shotguns were fired and a duck fell in front of them, and they could hear the duck scream as it fell and died. And she had a really difficult time trying to explain that to the children. So I think it's a matter of just pushing it a little bit away from civilization. Hunting is fine. You know, we're not asking you not to do that. We're saying just push it away a little bit because we've become urbanized, and we can reduce some of the conflict, I think.
I was there, and I want to put public record, say that I went to Morro Bay. I was on vacation visiting friends in San Luis Obispo, and I went up to Morro Bay and went to the sanctuary and met some folks at the museum, including Councilwoman Betty, I forget your last name, but and looked around. And I can see that this is an area that has gone through change. I think this is what this is about. What I think is that the good people of Morro Bay understand hunting, fishing, outdoor activities. That's what that town is all about.
It is.
There's bait shop, there's hunt shop, there's kayak shops. I mean, it's interesting. But it's grown. And the housing, you know, houses have gone down to the shore. The increase in outdoor activities has happened. It's really a popular place now. Morro Bay is booming, for good or bad. What used to be more of a pristine open area is now a multiple use area that has to juggle compatible uses. I think it's very, well, quite frankly, very moderate of you folks, because no one asked for a hunting ban. No one asked for, you know, anybody to be eliminated from the state lands, the city lands, the county lands. But people are asking for us to look as a regulatory body at the compatible uses in a multiple use area, given the change over time and how it is in real time now. We're talking about a couple of hundred yards here. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you know Morro Bay, Grassy Island's right there, the sanctuary's here, Los Osos over here, the town's here, the fish and game limits and the city limits and the fed limits all intertwine. And we're talking about a couple of hundred yards where people are kayaking, you know, duck hunters are using shotguns, kids are hiking, and I think we have a responsibility. Normally, I would say we don't like having local folks tell us what to do. I mean, we all have these regulatory egos. But when you go and look at this situation, the change has taken place. I mean, more and more people are there. There's hikers, there's kayakers, there's hunters, there's fishermen. And I just think your request is very compatible with what I'm thinking needs to be done in that area. I know no one's been shot yet. Hopefully no one will be. I know no one's been, you know, injured. But with the increase in hunting, because people love hunting there, and they should be able to hunt there. There's a lot of good, you know, duck hunting there. And there's a lot of kayaking, and there's a lot of hiking, and there's a lot of community activity. So I'm just saying we, as the regulators, I think, have to look at all these uses in a new area that's changed considerably in the last 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And your council, what, voted 4-1 for
we
this?
We did. We voted 4-1 to ask for the change. I don't see this council or any future council asking for a ban because
right.
we
Good.
Are an outdoor-oriented community. We still want to be considered a fishing town. We still want to be considered an outdoor town. And we understand that there's multiple uses. We need to balance our economics. We need to balance the safety. And this is what we're looking for. And we just need for you to know and bring to your attention that there's starting to be conflict here. And if we can do some safety measure, if we can keep the conflicts minimized by moving a few hundred feet or yards, that would just keep things peaceful.
Thank you, Betty.
How come I'm not surprised with your position, Bob?
Well, because I'm a modern, smart guy. Why wouldn't you be surprised by that kind of
thing? Bob's the kind of guy who built a house next to the airport and complained about the airplane.
No.
No. Eric Greening, followed by Gene Joy.
I am Eric Greening, and I think Commissioner Hatoy is recognizing something very real. I will say that there's one statement he made that isn't quite true. He said no one is advocating a total ban. Actually, no official civic entity is advocating a total ban, but there certainly are citizens and organizations, including the Slow Coast Alliance, which is a consortium of 40 environmental organizations dedicated to the protection and preservation of the coast, which has voted to recommend a total hunting ban on Morro Bay. The directors believe it is totally inconsistent with an acclaimed bird sanctuary and a national estuary of prime importance to migratory birds to allow waterfowl hunting of any kind. Much of the bay itself, and particularly where hunters seek brant geese, is an extremely popular recreation area, and hunting poses real threats to public safety. Additionally, the estuary increasingly has become more urbanized, and damage to real property and noise pollution are problems that need to be addressed. Further, the directors believe that the wisest and best use of Morro Bay is for ecotourism, which is negatively impacted by hunting. Gunfire not only kills targeted birds, but others as well. It is disturbing to boaters, hikers, nature enthusiasts, and those who want a quiet outdoor experience. Since many of the member organizations of the Alliance are already on record in favor of a total ban, the directors declared for SCA as a whole. There are well over 22,000 supporters in SCA. And a couple of additional points. One is, this is a bay that is urbanized on both sides. The incorporated city of Morro Bay is on the north shore, and the unincorporated area of Los Osos, which actually has a larger population, over 15,000, is on the south shore. There is a growing incompatibility of uses here. Another point is that since the Morro Bay Bird Festival has been calling more and more attention to the huge diversity of species present on the bay, it's important to recognize that this diversity of species includes an awful lot of species that are never hunted and not intended to be hunted, but that can be accidentally taken under unfortunate circumstances. In fact, the Audubon Society Christmas counts, and you can watch this over decades and decades past, every year the Morro Bay count is within the top 5 or 6 nationwide in terms of diversity of species, the total number of species involved. Certainly SCA is in support of Morro Bay's request to abandon the hunting on the grassy island. And we certainly see why, from a practical standpoint, a city trying to balance the competing uses of its many citizens, many of whom prefer a total ban and some of whom have other interests, would seek a compromise solution like this. But one thing we need to recognize that is that this is the smallest of all the national estuaries. It is bracketed by urban areas, and bullets do not respect the lines on the map. In other words, people who are shooting from areas where it's legal to shoot, there's nothing to stop bullets from crossing those lines. So please understand that there is a diversity of views, and some people do advocate a total ban, but certainly all views need to be heard. Thank you.
Well, I agree with him on one thing.
All views need to be heard.
No, I agree with him on one thing, bullets. And I don't know too many duck hunters that use bullets to hunt, but if I were you, I would
Gene Joy, followed by Fred Harpster, Jr.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. Commissioners. Welcome. Before I get started, I have a map I'd like to put up of Morro Bay, so when we're talking, at least we can get a visual of what we're talking about, if that's okay with the commissioners.
Sure. We're going to put it up.
Yeah, we don't have an easel. But
you need to have an assistant holding it.
No, he's going to put it
Steve,
up.
Steve, our audio guy, will hold it.
Oh. can we staple it right to this bulletin board here?
Right here.
Right here.
Otherwise, we can't see it. We're going to have to hire Steve as a seasonal.
You guys have to hold the corners.
Very good, Sonky.
We're coming over.
Is that in your job description?
It took three people to hold that.
Like a bad joke. How many state employees does it take to put up a map?
Anyhow, you know, they give us a visual there. It shows. Oh, excuse me. Let me start off here. My name is Gene Joy. I live in San Luis Obispo. I first was on the Bay in 1948. My dad took me there. I personally started hunting in 1950. So I've been involved with Morro Bay for 55 years. I've seen it grow, and I've seen it stop growing. What sometimes people fail to mention is that the Los Osos portion, which is the lower portion, has been in a building moratorium for since 1984 or 85, so it's pretty well boxed in. The Morro Bay, around the green part, the golf course in Morro Bay, that end up there, that really hasn't changed since I was a kid. I don't know, they built that out a long time ago, and it's almost the same. So you can look at the map there and see there isn't really too much room for expansion, and there is a lot of open area to the east and a lot of open area to the west. The lines drawn on there are as close as could be to the hunting boundary area. There are, I recognize by looking from here, they are small. You probably have to get a little closer to see them.
Could you turn around and kind of show us with your finger what the boundaries are? He took it off the screen.
There we go.
Just like a weatherman.
There we go. Yeah, like the weatherman.
Okay. This boundary right here is as close as it could be the city of Morro Bay boundary. Cuts across right through here. It ends up at Fairbanks Point. There's some question now whether it's in Fairbanks Point or a little south, but it's more or less really close to what it'd be. It just misses the outer edge of Grassy Island. This is called Grassy Island right there. Wish I had a pen. Do you have a pointer?
Who's got the laser?
Put my hand up there.
Here he goes.
Look at this.
This is the grassy.
Actually, you know.
Oh, look at that. Oh, my God.
Step back and do it.
Show us your Doppler radar.
Okay. There's Fairbanks Point. There's actually a marker there, 6125, which is being looked at right now. The line goes diagonally across and ends over here.
You said there's a what there?
There's a brass 4-inch monument there called 6125. I was involved in setting up these boundaries. I worked with the Fish and Game Department. And that time we had a laser, we had surveying equipment, and they found the positions to start from, and then we went ahead and shot all these boundaries in, and then eventually I worked with Brian Hunter, a Regional 3 manager, and between the both of us defined the boundaries all the way around the bay. So I'm very familiar with each corner.
I ask you one thing, I don't mean to interrupt, but you're saying now that what you're showing us is the current boundary.
Then it's offset 400 yards here from this point, and it comes down like this, and deadheads over here. And then from there, it goes straight across the bay right here, comes back over here, and goes all the way down and ends at the sand spit down in this corner. This area in here, all these areas are non-huntable. We used to be able to hunt all this right in here. There used to be what they called a firing line.
That's what I was going to ask. In 48 and 50, when you started hunting with your dad, you was allowed to hunt inside.
Yes, I did. I shot on those lines before. Yeah. It was very good.
Could you keep that?
Just stay on the
keep
map,
that
please.
Up there.
It was really it was something that a lot of people really enjoyed. If you didn't have a boat, you could just cross this channel right here and get over in here, and the birds would be in
there. How many kayakers were in there in those days?
Pardon, Mr. Keller?
How many kayakers were in there in those days?
None.
I mean,
there might have been some boaters, but I don't remember kayaks until...
The kayakers aren't excluded
later.
From going into those closed areas currently, correct?
No. So, this has been... We used to be able to hunt from here all the way into here. Naturally, all the way into here, anywhere you see in there that was state property. And then they took away this line here and then moved us over here, and then they took us. Now we're over here.
How do you got a time frame when they took all that away?
1983, 84.
And why'd they do that?
At that time, the firing line, the state parks campground is right in here, and the firing line was in here, and they were... These people complained about the noise being early in the morning because it was so close to their campground. And so that was part of the consideration in setting the 8 o'clock shooting time. But since then, this has been eliminated. There's no hunting in this whole area right here, as far as you could see. So it really isn't applicable anymore for what they did then.
So excuse me.
Well, yes, we gradually get moved over... Every few years, this area, this closed area in here, was done in 1996.
That's adjacent to the golf course.
Yeah, the 400-yard offset there, past the state park marina. Then this was partially closed. Baywood, we used to go right into Baywood right here and hunt the whole thing. And then there was a sunken boat here, and there was a temporary closed line, just a gentleman's agreement to keep the hunters out of this area. Right in here. Then later on, that line was moved out a little further to here. Now it's been backed off. By the way, this is 400 yards here. Okay? 400 yards. This was always, you were always able to hunt right here. And then they allowed some building to go in here. But these buildings are pretty well offset from that mean high tide line. So you have another 100 yards pretty near offset, maybe 75 to 100 yards offset from mean high tide line. So it's quite a distance. May not look like it's quite a distance from this line. Plus, this is really a non-hunting area. Nobody hunts that area right there.
Commissioner Gustafson, did you have a question?
I wanted to know when the 8 a.m. time was set. When was that part of the 83?
1983, 84,
so
right in that area,
80-45. That
primarily area. Because of the noise it was making over there in the campgrounds.
Is there a moratorium on building time?
This Los Osos had a sewer problem. They still haven't fixed since 1984, 85, I believe, 86, somewhere around there. They have not been able. They have had a moratorium on building.
No, so. I meant in terms of. Start time. If somebody were doing construction on their home, they're allowed to start at 7 a.m. in the morning. Nail guns, saws.
Oh, yeah. It's from my experience on the bay when I first started hunting, there was a retirement community there, and so we had a lot of older people out in the morning walking their dogs and doing things like that. Now this has changed. You have younger families in there. You have kids in there. People are getting up earlier and going to school and all that. So the whole community has changed in my lifetime.
Okay.
And there is a lot of things going on now that weren't going on there. And your garbage trucks, your jackhammers, your noise is a lot more than it was then.
Okay.
We've lost quite a bit of area. But the one thing that's important in establishing these areas here, which we agreed with partially, is that it's become a rest area for waterfowl and really important for brant. The winter population on brant, the Pacific Flyway goal was 2,000 birds. This last year we had a high of 4,400. So it's really worked because they can stay in this area in here. They can also stay in this area here. But there's been a lot of recreational traffic, and it has kind of pushed the birds more out in the bay this last year than it has in the past. So that is something that has changed also. getting on what about
excuse
our group.
Me, when you say recreational traffic, do you mean kayakers?
Yes, kayakers, canoers, boaters.
So they're disturbing the birds and pushing them out into the open water. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think it's more curiosity. I don't think it's really done intentionally.
No, I'm not suggesting anything's intentional.
Yeah. It, Brant, or as the most nervous species of geese, in I think in the United States, I think that's agreed upon with the biologists. So they're very nervous birds. So if you get close to them or get too close, they get very nervous and they don't like being bothered. And so if they're bothered very much in one area, they'll find another area to go to, maybe to answer your question.
I have one more quick question. Can you put the map back up, please? Because I just, why you have the pointer in your city. So now, because I know what the controversy here, I understand the history of what's happening, and I appreciate your concerns about the history of what happened in the 40s, the 60s, the 80s, and we have the current boundaries now. You mentioned the line that goes across from the harbor, I mean from the marina down up to the island.
Right.
In the proposal that the council's making today, where would the line move to? Right south of Grassy Island?
It would move south, but the only problem that I really see with that, just being honest about it, the kayakers in this marina right here, they have a kayak rental business right there, and when they take off, they shoot right straight across the bay, and they go to this point right here in the sand spit. For some reason, they just go right straight across. Right now, if the hunter is over here, if this is 400 yards, you can see there's 400, 800. It's over 1,000 yards. The boaters are away from the hunters right now. So, and to me, if you move the hunters this way, you're moving them closer to the recreational boaters. Right now, they're about 1,000 yards away from them, which I think, personally, myself, is better. I wouldn't want to see a mix of the hunters and the boaters closer together. I'd rather see them further apart.
But isn't Grassy Island what's in question?
That's our
proposal. Yes, this is the line right here.
I'm saying that's what's in question.
The city limits line wouldn't say. I think what's being asked of the commission is that they want to establish a no hunting line in here somewhere.
Right there, yeah.
So you know, well, there's the end of Grassy Island. So if you're saying not on Grassy Island, you'd have to come way over here.
Gene, where's the marina?
Right there.
The marina's.
No, the marina where we put in to go hunting.
It's right up here.
It's way up there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's all okay. City on the right side and golf course.
It's right around that turn spot right there.
So okay. How far from there is it to the line, the demarcation?
Oh, it's
about 1,000 yards.
From that where you put into this line right here?
Yeah.
It's more like 3/4 of a mile.
Okay.
And then at least
buffer off the shoreline, the buffer. It's 400 yards, you said?
This is 400 yards, yeah. Originally, back before 1996, that wasn't in. So when we're working with...
And again, south of your pointer there, what is on the land base there?
This right here?
Oh.
On the land.
On the land. What is
that's what they call Fairbanks Point. That's
okay, what is...
It joins the state park there.
Is that all residential, or is that that's
there,
a
no,
park?
There's no residential from here. This is the Heron Rookery. Actually, it's a Heron Rookery that's right in there. There's no residential in there.
But south of the line?
This is a golf course.
I want to know what's south of the line.
Nothing in here.
Okay.
Nothing.
And then a marina down there.
No houses. The houses stop about right up in there somewhere. This is all golf course and state park and the marina and that area in there.
Okay.
Get back here before I run out of time here. Anyhow, I'm... co-founder of the Black Brant Group, and we really concentrate on, and president at this present time until they get rid of me, we really concentrate on Brant, and we're involved with the Pacific Flyway on their counts and their nesting, and we're the largest contributor in the United States, because that's not saying too much, because maybe there isn't that many of us, that contribute to research projects in Alaska, funding of habitat projects, and that for Black Brant. Our main goal right now, we have two projects going on right now with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Alaska and also the Native Alaskans in Alaska. Dr. Senninger, if you're not familiar with him, is one of the premost experts on Brant in Alaska. And his studies show that heavy fox and gull predation has a big effect at times on Brant population. The fall and spring subsistence hunting by natives as well as the shooting of flightless Brant are being addressed right now. The Alaska natives are cooperating. For a long time, they wouldn't cooperate. Now they're cooperating. They're working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and working through the native up there themselves. So in turn, what they've done, I understand the season, Brant season has been reduced dramatically just this past month or so, it was either 90 days or 120 days. It's been reduced to, I understand, 30 days. So that's going to have a pretty good effect on Brant. They used to be able to collect eggs. There was no, they had a limit on that up until 1996, and they took it off. And now they put it back on. So eggs collection is almost stopped, which is a really important thing. So we see nothing but good things happening for Brant. Everyone's cooperating to increase the Brant population.
Before you go any further on that, I wanted to ask you, that's commendable, the amount of resources you put into that. Do you get any assistance from the city council or the voters in that area for that same help?
No. With our nonprofit group that we have one fundraiser a year. It's held in the South Bay Community Center. And we raise our funds there in a nonprofit dinner that we have. And then we use those funds, all of them, nobody gets paid. All those funds go directly towards, right now, Black Brant and anything that's involved with Black Brant. We have never received any money from any other source for the last 10 years. We incorporated 10 years ago.
Thank you.
Ending, I think, Herbs, before I take too much time, I said we selected this year to fund these two projects, and we were promised great results. We were even promised that we don't have our results yet because they're working as we speak, but we might see a 2,000, 3,000 bird increase just for these two projects that are going along right now, headed by Dr. Sedinger. But we'll get the final field reports back probably in another month or two. Any other questions? By the way, I'm going to leave this map with the commissioners.
Commissioner Rogers.
This could be your property. You can go ahead and have it for references to look at a little closer. And I'd be happy to ask.
I have a question, if I may.
Sure,
Mr. Brennan.
Commissioner Rogers.
Could you put the map back up? What is your opinion of moving that line to the bottom of Grassy from the hunting perspective, not from any other perspective, but from the impact upon the hunter's tick?
The first thing Mr. Rogers had to say is that I have, in the 55 years I've been on that bay, I have never seen somebody stand on Grassy Island to hunt on it. The hunting is usually off the island. Usually it's in waders, and they wade off the island. So the island itself really isn't hunted. I mean, the hunters don't sit on the island. I mean, maybe they have. Somebody has seen them. But myself, personally, I have never. So to answer your question, they're hunting off the island. To move the hunters closer to the recreational boaters, to me, is the wrong move. I think.
I understand. My question to you was, what would be the impact with respect to your take on average?
If they took that away, you mean?
Right. If that were removed from a daily bag take, what would you think would be the impact?
I think it would be, it's an important area. Since I was a kid, you know, it was just part of the hunting area, and something that we managed to hang on to. And I don't think it's a good area. I mean, the birds hang out in certain areas. It's not an eelgrass area. The estuaries already mapped that. It's not a feeding area, but for some reason they like it. And maybe it's because of other pressure being put on them in other areas of the bay in the closed zones, is that they're starting to use this area more.
So around that grassy area is one of the prime spots for the black brant hunting in the bay.
It's just to be honest, you know, it's a good area to hunt in. You know, it's one of the better areas in the bay to hunt in.
Okay,
if you're a decoy, this is strictly decoying.
I have another question. The 8 o'clock start time was an artifice of an old line, right? That,
yes.
83-84.
The main part of it, yes.
Right. What would be the normal starting time for the way black brant behave in the very first part of the day and the very end of the day? How do they behave relative to normal ducks?
All waterfowl are more active earlier in the morning. Most duck hunters pack up their stuff and leave at 9 o'clock. And so this is really, I think it's put a slight conflict in it, trying to help. I think it's hurt, because what it does, it puts the hunters and the recreational users on the bay at the same hour. And to me, the normal time is a little bit after daylight, you know, in the morning. Or 7 o'clock would be fine. If you moved it from 8 to 7, that would be helpful. Hopefully,
but black bat hunting would be good if,
black,
we, if it was
be
at the normal starting time, a half hour before sunrise.
That's
like
exactly
the
what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
The normal wild waterfowl starting time would be, well, it's all, it moves every day, a
right.
minute or two, but it
quarter, half hour before sunrise.
Right. In
well,
other words,
quarter to seven, more or less, 20 to seven.
Because the conflict with the campground is now gone.
Yeah.
Right.
Why?
Because
you can't hunt there.
Oh, sure, sir. Okay, I thought you meant.
And as a consequence, what shoving the whole thing up until 8 o'clock has done is jam everybody up into the same use time.
Yes, it has.
I'm a duck hunter, and you're pretty much all done by 9 o'clock, and then you got to wait until the evening when they come back in.
Talking to the hunters that hunt there, with most of them feel at least maybe 60 or 70% of them feel that they would be coming back at 8 o'clock instead of heading out at 8 o'clock if the time changed.
Yeah.
And I think looking at the users on the bay sitting there and looking at the people starting to come out and walk their dogs on the beach, the kayakers and canoers come out, I think the kayak agencies open at 8, you know, so that's when business starts. So it's common sense that if you put everybody together to come out at the same time, having an 8 o'clock shooting time, thinking you're helping, but I think it's really hurting, my personal opinion.
Sounds like it puts the muck in.
But isn't that based on, I'm just, because I wasn't there in 83, obviously, but that's not based on the incompatible uses. It's based on the campgrounds and the residents concerned about the noise impacts, right?
That was when it was originally done,
yeah,
but they've changed the boundaries.
I'm just asking, because I don't know.
At that time, that firing line, was very close to the campgrounds, you know.
Right, and now this house is down there.
And I think the campground people complained to the state parks and said, you know, this shooting is over there and that. And then they worked, at that time, I think they worked with the Fish and Game, and the hunters were involved somewhat, too. So they said, yeah, maybe it is close, you know.
Yes, that was a compromise that was done back then, I think.
Pardon?
I think that was a compromise that was done back
then.
Yes. Yeah.
But
okay.
The hunting takes place a long ways away from that area right now.
And isn't it also true at that time you could hunt that entire eastern portion?
Yes, you could hunt the whole bay.
So backing it off to 8 o'clock, you still had an immense area to hunt in that is now off limits. Right?
Yes, totally.
Right.
And just one other note, a lot of the hunting takes place against the peninsula, so a lot of that shooting is the furthest point away from anything.
Got it.
Mr. President, Gene?
Yes, sir.
How much does duck hunting drop off after black brant season closes? Is it used about the same amount, or is it drop off considerably?
It drops off quite a bit because the brant are the, let's just face it, they're the best eating goose in the western
States. Okay. And how long is the season?
Their prize.
How long is the season currently?
The current season is 30 days, but you have to remember in Morro Bay, at that time of the year in the winter, we get 7-foot high tides and we get 1.5-foot minus tides. So it's a real drastic change. So your days of hunting could be restricted quite a bit just by the tides. You have to have the right tide in order to get out there. Then you have to make sure you get out before that tide drops, otherwise you're stuck, which I came close to. But
yeah,
I've had friends get stuck and they had to walk all the way from Morro Rock Peninsula, clean around to Baywood, back to Morro Bay. I mean, hook a ride back to Morro Bay.
Yeah. Miles.
The duck hunting still is somewhat important. A lot of people do like to hunt ducks, and there is a good duck population out there. Unfortunately, we have a great pintail population of over probably 1,500 birds out there, but the limit for the last several years has been one, so it hasn't made it very interesting to go to go hunt.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Fred Harpster, Jr., followed by Fred Harpster.
Good morning, commissioners. I think one thing that we should clear up about the boundary and everything is the tide. That's something that as soon as the tide retracts, it's all high and dry. So it's kind of a moot point. Nobody's going to hunt on high and dry ground. And it can happen within just a couple of hours. I mean, from being a completely flooded island to basically knee-deep in water. So, anyways, that's.
Are you? Let me ask. Are you representing yourself or an organization?
I'm going to be here as representing the Black Brant Group.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Okay. I just wanted to clear that up. Sorry. Okay. Anyways, I'm lucky. My name's Fred Harpster. I'm lucky to live in Morro Bay. I've lived there my whole life. I've hunted there my whole life. I feel very fortunate to be here. hunting there. It's a great hunter opportunity place. My family has made many friends through our love of waterfowl hunting. Many of these friendships were born by meeting families who traveled to Morro Bay to go brant hunting. One family in particular, the Cups, who are now in their 80s and have been Los Osos residents living right on the Back Bay for 30 years. George Cups went hunting three times in Morro Bay last year in the same tradition he has for the last five decades. Also, last year during the 30-day brant season, my father and I took six different hunters from Northern California hunting to share in this unique experience. These are only a few examples of why Morro Bay is an important place to me and my family with regard to hunting. It is a place that our love of waterfowl hunting was born and where we have nurtured the tradition of hunting and camaraderie we so deeply enjoy. It is also the place we plan to pass on this history and tradition to our future generation. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. It is a fact that safe, viable waterfowl hunting programs can and do exist as part of a multi-use resource plan throughout wetlands and estuaries in the United States. To say that hunting is a danger to the general public or other recreational users of the bay is simply an uninformed viewpoint used to try and scare the public. There have been no reported accidents due to hunting on the bay ever. It is also a fact that waterfowl enthusiasts constitute one of the largest organized groups dedicated to the preservation of waterfowl, habitat, and nesting grounds, perpetuating their sport by enriching their ecosystem and biology of the resource. These groups, as you know, include Ducks Unlimited, California Waterfowl, and locally, the Black Brant Group. The real problem is not hunting, but it's educating the public at large. Hunting in Morro Bay, when people were asked if they would sign a petition to a compromise on hunting in Morro Bay, the response was they thought Morro Bay was a bird sanctuary and didn't even know hunting was allowed. Additionally, the mayor of Morro Bay commented that if she found a dead bird in her backyard, she would have assumed that a hunter shot it. She lives by me, which is quite a ways away, for whatever reason. Other instances include kayak tours profiting from utilizing the Department of Fish and Game's lease and not respecting the rules regarding distances from hunting setups. For all of the above reasons and more, local hunters would be glad to assist in any way with signage of the hunting area and do whatever possible to help further educate the public of this important resource. The land used for hunting is, as you know, outside of the city of Morro Bay's boundaries and is under the State Department of Fish and Game's purview. As such, it is public land and should support all types of public recreational use. For hunting to be singled out as a disturbance is unfair. Kayaking and other recreational uses have also an effect on the bay. We strongly encourage the Commission to keep the hunting provisions for Morro Bay intact as they stand now. They are already the most restrictive in the state. There are only a couple of spots in California that brant hunting is possible, and to further restrict hunting in Morro Bay would adversely impact hunter access to a saltwater experience.
Thank you. Very good.
Thanks.
Fred Harpster, followed by Walt Manziel.
Good morning. My name is Fred Harpster. My family's been a resident of San Luis County since 1879. I've lived in Morro Bay for 60 years. I was a professional firefighter for 31 years for the city of Morro Bay. First, I'd like to talk about safety. I've been on many rescues for years and years and years of all types in Morro Bay. Never one with a hunting accident. It's mostly boaters, surfers, getting in trouble with boats and stuff, capsized boats, fires. But safety is not an issue with hunting. Hasn't been ever. It could be provoked at one time or another from people that have been talking, some kind of making rumors that it's just inevitable that it's going to happen. But the way things have gone, there's no safety issue. Boy, everybody's kind of touched on all kinds of bases that I was going to talk about. So I will go farther on to the George Cups issue with my son that just talked to you. He's been hunting Morro Bay since 1955. He's like a father to me. He's 84 years of age. I am the one that hunts on Grassy Island. I had him on Grassy Island three times this last year. It's hard to find places to hunt where you can put an older person that's a little bit feeble and everything to where they're on solid ground to hunt. You get a couple hours there, on the right tides. Grassy Island is very important to me for that issue. We've already given up 700 acres. We've given up shooting time. We've given up shell restrictions. And we've given up part of our season for waterfowl hunting. I think it's important now that we don't give up any more. That's really all I have to say. I want to make it short and sweet. But that's
questions,
where we're at.
Questions, Mr. President?
Go ahead, Mr.
You said shell restrictions. You mean you simply mean steel shot?
At one time, we had no shell restrictions whatsoever, and now we're down to they allow us a box to take out on the bay. It's a box of shells per person, 25 rounds.
It's within the state wildlife area.
Right. Richard, it's just like being on a refuge.
Right. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Yeah.
No, good job. Thank you.
Walt Manziel, followed by Bill Gaines.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, department staff, Walt Manziel representing the California Rifle and Pistol Association. I had the good fortune during an early part of my career in the 1960s and early 1970s to be a game warden at the Morro Bay area and all of the San Luis Obispo County coast. As the prior gentleman said, California brand hunting now is pretty well restricted to two places, Humboldt Bay, parts of Humboldt Bay, and Morro Bay. We used to hunt brant extensively when I was a boy in South San Diego Bay, and that's all a thing of the past. I don't know of any other bay or estuaries with the eelgrass beds on the California coast that really draw the brant. They only get 30 days a year to hunt those brant, and to me that 30 days ought to be theirs to use during that 30-day period. Mother Nature is going to control and take away probably half of that time due to the tides that he talked about or other weather factors. When the wind blows, that bay can get really bad and they can't get out there, and that's going to happen during that season. It seems to me the kayakers get the other 9 months of the year anyway, or 11 months of the year, and all the other people that use the bay. There is some other waterfowl hunting there, but it's not near as intense as the brant hunting. The California Rifle and Pistol Association would support continuing the regulations as they are now for brant hunting on Morro Bay. The area is open and the time frame that's in place. We feel very strongly that people are always talking about compromise, 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 but as hunters compromise, it's always we take a step back and somebody else takes a step forward. So after we've compromised three times, a half of a half of a half is a 16th or something like that. So thank you.
Thank you, Walt.
Bill Gaines.
Mr. Trainer, members of the commission, my name is Bill Gaines. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the California Waterfowl Association. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'd like to welcome the two new commissioners as well to the commission. There's a lot been said today about waterfowl hunting on Morro Bay. I just want to touch on a couple of points. We've heard a lot of rhetoric about safety and economics on hunting in general and in Morro Bay specifically. I haven't seen anybody come up with any documented proof. I've brought with me today some documentation. First of all, we got a report by the Department of Fish and Game that has documented that in the year 2000, there was no waterfowl hunting-related accidents throughout the entire state. Now, these are Fish and Game numbers. These aren't numbers that were put together by California Waterfowl Association or somebody else. In 2001, the latest year that I've seen numbers on, there was only one waterfowl hunting accident, non-fatal, throughout the entire state. I am unaware of any documented waterfowl-related incident, safety incident in Morro Bay ever. Now, on the flip side, there has been a variety of issues, safety issues related with kayaking and boating and so forth. Mr. Gene Joy, who was very humble when he was up here, didn't say anything about the day when he actually rescued 11 different people that were out there boating, not hunting, but boating on the bay because they were having problems with their boats and with the tides and with waves and so forth. And hunters actually coming to the rescue of boaters out in Morro Bay has been well documented over the years, but there has never been a documented incident where there has been a safety issue related to waterfowl hunting. we heard about bullets flying across the sanctuary corridors and so forth. Well, first of all, as I know all the commissioners know, you don't hunt waterfowl with bullets. You hunt them with waterfowl loads. Maximum lethal range on those maybe 40 to 50 yards. I mean, their maximum travel distance, depending on what kind of loads you're shooting and which way the wind's blowing, maybe 150 yards, but they're not going to hurt anybody any farther than 30 yards out. And again, as I mentioned to you, there's never been a documented case of any waterfowl hunting related safety issue on Morro Bay ever. And as Mr. Joy told you, they've been hunting there for over 150 years. I do have that report available. I'll be happy to provide that to you before I leave today. I also have a report that was put together by the National Shooting Sports Foundation, the National Wild Turkey Federation, and the United States Sportsmen's Alliance that provides some very interesting documented numbers on how safe hunting is relative to other sports. And I'd like to cite some of this, if I would. Number one sport that has injuries related to it, of course, as one might suggest or expect, is football. Okay. Ice hockey's number two. But as you read down the list, you are nine times more likely to have a safety incident, if you will, playing soccer than hunting. Eight times more likely to have an injury doing cheerleading than hunting. Tennis, you're three times more likely to have an injury playing tennis than hunting. And there's reasons for that. It's because hunters, as you all know, have to go through a mandatory 10-hour hunter training course here in California before they can get their hunter's license. Those courses dive heavily into gun safety. Hunters arguably are the most safe gun users in the entire country, and I think the statistics, some of which I just threw at you.
Bill, do you have any safety statistics on petting a dog off a bicycle?
Shut up. Shut up.
You might want to talk to Commissioner Hattori about that. But I'd like to talk a little bit, if I could, about the economics of hunting as well. We've heard a lot of rhetoric today about recreational uses in Morro Bay, people coming to the bay, pumping up the economy for doing things other than hunting in the bay. I do have some documentation. I got a report put out by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the United States Department of Commerce. The latest numbers that are available are 2001, but in California alone, hunters spent over $315 million in 2001 alone on hunting related, whether it be hotels, gas stations, restaurants, whatever. Now, we don't have any specific numbers for Morro Bay, but I can tell you, as some of you may know, there is only two places throughout the entire state of California where you can hunt black brant in California. You can hunt them up in Humboldt Bay up north, and you can hunt them in Morro Bay, and that is it. If you want to hunt them somewhere else, you've got to travel outside the state of California, and you know how long of a coastline California has. People come to Morro Bay to hunt brant. Now, they may not stop in at the city council and check in and say, hey, by the way, we're here staying in your restaurants and or eating in your restaurants and staying in your hotels, but Morro Bay is a destination point for brant hunters because it's only one of two options throughout the state.
And Bill, that's been for a lot of years in history where the people around Morro Bay know that Morro Bay is a destination for historical brant hunting. So anyone who teaches school there and would take a bunch of little kids on a field trip would know that there was going to be hunters out there shooting.
Should know.
Yeah.
Well, sure. Well, we've heard people today talk about just looking for a simple compromise solution, and as some of the other speakers before me have indicated, you know, about 15 to 20 years ago, the hunters stepped forward, met with some of the locals that were concerned about hunting on Morro Bay, and they did reach a compromise. And they gave up, in many people's eyes, a lot more than they possibly should have. The 700 acres that you've talked about that Gene threw up here on his map was arguably the best brant hunting in the entire bay. Certainly was the best hunting for waterfowl other than brant. They gave that up. Morro Bay is also the only place in the state, the only place throughout California, where the waterfowl shoot times don't start a half an hour before sunrise. They start at 8 o'clock. And I think the discussion earlier today about moving those back perhaps to 7 o'clock, which is consistent with when you can run a pile driver next to somebody's house, you know, is very reasonable considering the fact that it would allow hunters out there earlier, allow them when the brant are a little bit more active, and would likely get them off the water earlier when the other boaters start showing up. So we see no reason to reach an additional compromise. We believe that the hunting community has already gone a lot farther than they should have. I'll make one more comment. The people that want to talk about their concern over Brant and the other various water or wetland-related species that are out in Morrow Bay, one of the reasons why waterfowl populations are arguably the most stable of any wildlife or fish population throughout the country and certainly in California is not because of people that want to outlaw hunting, but it's because of the hunters themselves. The land that is put into habitat at a significant cost that remains in prime ownership is put in there because people can hunt on it, maybe just a few days a year, but they're managing that land year-round. The dollars that are pumped into the Fish and Wildlife Service, and most notably the Department of Fish and Game from Pittman-Robertson dollars that are generated off of an excise tax that is charged on hunting-related equipment, are critical to the Department of Fish and Game and their ability to manage wildlife areas like Morrow Bay on a year-in and year-out basis, especially when they're under very, very tight budget constraints, as they are right now, as I'm sure Paul Stein and Zonkey Mastrip can confirm for you. The various things that are happening on the ground for habitat, for waterfowl, including Brant, are happening not because people don't like hunting, but because people do hunt those birds. They may take a few year in and year out, but they put back much, much more. And those benefits aren't simply for Brant or simply for waterfowl. The various wetlands and the various habitat projects that have taken place because hunters have taken the lead on them provide benefits for a variety of wetland-dependent species. In fact, in California, we estimate that about 50% of our threatened and endangered species are wetland-dependent and are benefiting from the various projects that are happening on the ground. If you care about Brant, if you care about the future of Morrow Bay and the various wetland-dependent bird species that depend upon it, you should care about maintaining the hunting tradition that happens on Morrow Bay. And California Waterfowl Association urges the commission to strongly consider maintaining hunting on Morrow Bay as much as absolutely possible. Thank you very much.
Bill, question?
Sir.
Commissioner Hattori.
Thank you. Talk with me for a second.
Sure.
I want to talk to you about thinking, and I'd like to know your thoughts. No, I'm not anti-hunting. I voted for most of the things that you've ever wanted. I'm learning a lot about hunting. And when I hear the Harbster family talk about their hunting traditions, those are compelling and poignant stories about California history, about tradition of hunting, about habitat preservation, about the experience of families that have done traditional hunting in the Morrow Bay area. And that's something that I think has to be encouraged, applauded, and maintained by this commission. At the same time, I hear a city council member coming before us who said that her community came to the city council and is concerned about uses that used to be much more compatible that are now in conflict because of population growth, housing development, increased marina traffic, increased tourism, bird watching, kayaking, on and on and on and on. If you're a person like me, who's trying to figure out how to balance all this. I know you're an advocate for the hunters, and you do a hell of a good job. You really do. And I'm not an anti-hunter, but how would you, as a person representing California waterfowl, how do you balance an area that changes? We can't just always say hunting has to continue the way it is, no matter what, in infinity, because that's the way it always was. I mean, that's you know, putting blinders on. If something changes, if an area, and I'm not talking about even the safety issue. No one's been shot. We don't want anybody to be shot. No, you know, damage has been done. But these uses of hunters with shotguns, you know, going into areas that now have housing, that now have more recreational activities, on and on and on. Where would you say we have to draw the line or change regulations or take these things into consideration? I've never seen you come before us and say, you know, you're right, we've got to roll this back a little. And maybe you shouldn't be the one that does that. But if I'm doing that,
on Moto Duck.
Okay, good. We did. And yeah, thank you for that issue. But if I'm doing that, you understand that I'm not being anti-hunting. I'm trying to take the other uses and other resource considerations, you know, into question here. So help me out here. I mean, where would you compromise?
Be happy to. First of all, one thing that you have to look at is how many days are those hunters actually going to be out in the field? Now, there are a few people, a handful of people, that will hunt ducks throughout the entire duck season. But by and large, the lion's share of these people are only out there during what has been a 30-day Brant season And as a couple of people mentioned earlier, only when the tides are right during that 30-day brant season. Now, I can tell you right now, the Fish and Wildlife Service is looking very, very strongly at reducing that season this year, perhaps to as short as 18 days or even shorter. Now, when you take into account the tides that may be beneficial for brant hunting during that 18-day season, you're likely to see that cut. I mean, I'll ask one of the local folks, 18-day season, how many days out of 18 days are you likely to have tides brant with any season? Six. So Commissioner Toy, you're talking about a very likely scenario this year where there may be brant hunting only 6 days on Morrow Bay totally. Now, recognize that the kayakers and the other users can use that bay 365 days a year. We're talking only 6 days. Now, we've got an 8 o'clock shoot time, not because we wanted to have one, but because we were trying to be reasonable. Yep. A lot of people seem to forget about the fact that we have given up a lot already.
Exactly, I'm not.
If you were to roll that back to 7 o'clock, consistent with when construction and everything else can come in, if it's a noise factor issue, I mean, you're going to get those hunters off that bay during those 6 days, probably long before people get done packing their ice chest, you know, to think about going out in the bay doing something else. And then if you want to talk about incidents on housing and so forth, you saw the map that Gene Joy put up here. It's a non-issue. I've hunted Morrow Bay. I've been out there. I know Commissioner Flores has as well. Those houses are an awful long ways away. There's absolutely no chance of sprinkling shot down on their roofs. It just wouldn't happen. You'd have to be shooting a rifle out there, which these guys are not doing. So a lot of the issues that people are trying to throw out there and saying we've got a safety issue, we've got people being shot, we've got, you know, shot raining down on houses. Gee, it's happening, you know, 9 months out of the year. They're not issues. What it is, it's a guy's trying to outlaw hunting on the bay simply because they don't agree with hunting.
Well, I think some people are doing that, but I don't think the people that came before us today are doing that, and that's not what I'm trying to do. I just want to. No one yet today has said we want to outlaw hunting on Morrow Bay.
But there was.
And a very big coalition, I might add.
Well, I've
we're not just
print.
Talking.
I mean,
but we're talking about that's the spectrum that's happening in California
Bob,
today.
The reality is that group, if they could have lobbied their city council to come to a unanimous vote to come before this body and say we want to ban hunting in Morrow Bay, that body would have done it.
No, the body is a reasonable body that said, no, this is a multiple-use city. We have hunting shops, we have bait shops, we have restaurants, we have... There. I'm not talking about a total ban of hunting. Nobody that proposed this today and what we're looking at is a total ban of hunting.
But you will acknowledge the fact that there is a large faction out there that would love...
Yeah, and then there's a faction that would love to hunt anywhere at any time at all hours.
Well,
I don't think...
There is not a group of people...
If we lifted all restrictions, people would hunt.
Commissioners, let me weigh in quickly. Part of the reason why we're in the situation that we are in today is because of the hunting community's fault. We simply haven't done a good job of educating the outside public as to, first of all, the safety associated with hunting, and second of all, the benefits on the ground to wetland-dependent and other species. You know, from what we do, I talked about Pittman Robertson dollars. One of the things I don't think Gene Joy mentioned, that his Black Brant group has sent between $60,000 and $100,000 up to the Fish and Wildlife Service over the course of the last 10 years alone to do brant related studies. And I've worked very, very closely with Dr. Jim Sedinger and the folks with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that are doing a lot of that on the ground work. And they've told me point blank, they said, Bill, if it wasn't for the money that the Black Brant group is giving us, we simply couldn't afford to do a lot of the studies that we're doing now. And those brant are benefited directly from that research. And as I mentioned earlier, the reason why waterfowl populations are relatively stable compared to other species that are non-game species is because of the money that is put in by the private sector to help do research which promotes those populations. The service is doing things with that money that they couldn't do otherwise, and those studies not only benefiting black brant, but a variety of other species as well. There are no better budget situation than the Department of Fish and Game is right now.
Yeah, if I may, you know, Bill brings up a very fine point, I think, and that is the issue of education.
Yeah,
I think a long distance needs to be gone before people will genuinely understand firearms, no less hunting safety. If there's a marvelous new book out called Freakonomics, it's an amazing book, and it was written by quite a accomplished economist. It's just on the New York bestseller list here in the last couple of weeks. one of the things that he was looking at was people's perception of gun safety, not hunting safety, gun safety. And he did a whole survey on with mothers and fathers and asked them where would they rather send their child, to a house that had a gun in it or a house that had a pool? They all said they'd never send their child to a house that had a gun in it. And, gee, wouldn't it be lovely to have their child go to a house with a pool, which is 100 times more dangerous statistically. And that's gun safety. That's not a trained hunter safety. So, yeah, there is a significant misconception in the public with respect to the safety of firearms.
It's not just education alone, though. And I've always said this. They wouldn't need a lot of us in the job we have if people would learn how to communicate. And it's about communication. And when you have adversarial groups like that in an area, they just will not communicate with each other. And we've had other areas along the coastline of the state of California where the local agencies thought that they had jurisdiction over our waterways where hunting was allowed and stuff, and have tried to stop it. And as soon as those situations have been confronted, Bob, and they communicate, and the people that have tried to stop it in those other areas have found out the truth about duck hunting and how the pellets from the shotguns are not hitting their house and what's really happening there, they back off. And just through the communication part. So it's bigger than just education. It involves communication as well. And if I still say that, if people would learn to communicate, we could eliminate a lot of these jobs.
You know, I'm struck. I continue to be struck with the out of sync nature of this 8 o'clock start time.
Well, I want to make a recommendation before we leave here today that one of the considerations that we have on our dockets for the August meeting is to change the shoot time for the black brand.
It's in there. It's actually built into the document.
You know, I agree completely with us looking at that. The reason is it's very clear that simply by doing an 8 o'clock start time, we have placed people together in the same resource about which we're hearing there are conflicts. So that doesn't make any sense to me at all. And I imagine the department, well, we'll find out.
You know, the thing that strikes me, though, is that I can't understand why these various groups, users, can't seem to get along. I mean, look, we have people that are out in the field that are hunting big game deer, antelope, elk in the state. We also have hikers that are in the field, campers that are in campgrounds at the same time that these activities are taking place. And yet we don't hear the amount of complaints as we do in this small bay along the coast. And I don't understand how, as was pointed out earlier, you know, you have a 30-day season, may go to 18, which may be reduced to 6 because of tides. Why the kayakers and other user groups don't either avoid the area or use it the other 11 months out of the year? It's just beyond me why they can't do that. I mean, is kayaking prime during December and January or that's what I don't understand. And it's so to me. Bob, in answer to your question, and I know you went down there and toured, I had the opportunity to actually hunt the bay, so I have, you know, pretty good first-hand experience and knowledge of this area. We were a tremendous distance away from any landmass. But I think there's I think the agenda is pretty blatant, what's going on here. So I think our responsibility is to sift through all this and try to make sense of what the real issue is here, not get caught up in the sort of the local issues there, and make a decision that's right for these various user groups. And you know, I'm not inclined to support any sort of change. Sure. I'll let you know, and I think you know that right now. But as somebody who's been there, you know, if you had the map up there.
Yeah.
It's a long ways away, and frankly, I've never heard of a duck crying out loud as it's falling to the ground, quite honestly. I just think, and that's the sort of stuff that when people make those sort of remarks about bullets and sort of perpetuate these myths, it really does it. It's an injustice to all of us.
Sure. Okay, glad you said. We have many other people that want to speak, but the values issue is something that we're confronting more and more these days. And I'm not saying that I know what good things hunters do in the state of California. Other people don't know this. I mean, I live in an urban area. When I mention that I'm on the Fish and Game Commission, they folks always say to me, how can you support hunting? Blah, 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 blah. And they don't know anything about hunting. They live in L.A. They eat meat. They wear leather shoes, but they don't know anything about hunting. And I'm the one that has to, believe it or not, tell them, you know, hunting is a historical and legal thing that goes on in California. Hunters, you know, protect resources. But people don't know that. So values have changed, you know. They're and in Morro Bay, it's just a microcosm of all these things coming into a very condensed area. The distances are not far away. We're talking, I mean, see what everybody else is doing from Morro Rock down to the marina. I mean, we're talking hundreds of yards on either side sometimes, you know what I mean? So all I'm saying is all these issues we're talking about, the values, the different points of view, are all condensed in the Morro Bay area. I think that's why you have this issue before us today. And in addition to that, there are elementary schools that have seen ducks fall. To you, that's not an issue. To them, it's a horror. Maybe they've not been educated. So it's not like people are trying to. It's people have different beliefs, and we have to respect all of them. That's what I'm struggling with. Let's just hear from more people. But I'm not trying to say that anybody is lying. Anybody has a point of view that's trying to knock everyone else out of the state of California. It's just different values condensed into a very little area. And we're the ones that have to regulate this.
Just
so.
One quick final comment, and then I'll leave the podium. I will tell you that we've done a much better job of educating the players up in Sacramento.
Yep.
You know, we've got an excellent long-term working relationship with the California Audubon Society. We've got a very, very good working relationship with the professional staff, with the Sierra Club. We tag team on legislation all the time, budget issues. Defenders of Wildlife is another very, very close partner of ours. But we've taken the time to educate them about the value of hunting to habitat conservation. And I think that is the long-term solution to conflicts in Morro Bay and elsewhere, is taking the time, whether they choose to actively hunt or not, at least get them to understand, you know, the role of hunting in habitat conservation, you know, and the history of hunting, so that they can at least have an understanding of that.
I mean, as you know, I was a lobbyist for the Sierra Club for 12 years, and the Sierra Club does not oppose hunting. And I remember PETA coming to my office and overturning my desk because we wouldn't oppose, you know, the shooting of goats on Catalina Island and things like that, or burrow reduction in the desert. So I'm just saying, I know we can work together on these issues, and it's just a values thing that people are struggling with.
Thank you.
We got any more speaker cards?
No, I don't have any more speaker cards. That includes the public comments.
Can you fill out a card?
The only.
Oh, well, you have to fill out a card, but I think. I know it's a team here.
You can, fill out a card and you can come up and speak.
Yeah, there's no special, whether people send letters or not, there's no special time given to people on issues. Everybody has the right to fill out a card.
Is this the kayaker owner?
Yeah, I think so. Letter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Bob. There's no issue with the time, right? It's in the regs. So we can hold back.
The only thing we have to do on this issue is go to notice.
Do we have to go? We don't have to go to notice.
Yeah. Okay. For. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was in there.
Go to notice.
As one of the options. Oh. Okay.
I mean, we can take no action today other than have the department. I mean, our staff go to notice for the.
Keep all regulations.
Intent to amend.
I have to make a motion. Change it. You guys can just make a motion. Go to notice on the department's recommendations.
Right. Yeah. Hand it to. There you go.
It comes to the phone. Your turn.
Okay, go ahead and take the mic.
Yep.
I do have packets of information. Should I give them to you now, or
Commissioner Hattori?
Me and I'll pass them out.
Okay, I thought that there were only five people to give a packet to, and I only made up five, and obviously I was wrong.
Yeah, that's fine.
So, okay, great, thanks. Bob, I'm going to keep yours for a little while because I need to refer
okay,
to
cool.
it.
I need to bring it to me. I have questions. I can't help with it.
Oh, he's keeping mine.
So this is something that I will leave in your hands. These are actually the original petitions. I would just like to have the opportunity to have them back.
Cool.
Okay.
Who are you?
Well, my name is Mandy Davis, and I live in Morro Bay. I represent a citizens group called Serene. And we were the original people that started to research hunting on Morro Bay. And we have spent the last 8 months really extensively researching it. And what I mean by extensively researching is speaking to hunters, speaking to the municipalities, speaking to people that have been in process with this for a really long time. And I have to tell you that originally I grew up in wilderness areas. I grew up hunting and fishing with my dad. It has been a family tradition for my family also. So for our group and as me representing our group, this is not about the ethical or morality of hunting in and of itself. It is very, very specifically about whether or not hunting is appropriate for the Morro Bay Estuary in this time, in this place. And what we have come to over months of research, and I would like to go into some of that research here, is that we are advocating for not a ban, even though throughout the process, after we have presented to a whole variety of organizations and individuals, there are over 25,000 people represented just within the county of San Luis Obispo that are advocating for a complete ban. They are representative of the Audubon Society, of Sierra Club, of the Humane Society, a whole variety of people. You do have some of those letters in your packet. This is not about environmentalists versus hunters. There is an incredible diversity of individuals that have taken a stance on this, both for a compromise and for a ban. So I would like to point that out. But what we are advocating for is basically what the city had their conclusion, and that is advocating for a reduction in days and a reduction in territory. There are a whole variety of reasons for those, but they basically boil down to three separate areas. One is economic impacts, one is biological impacts, and one is public nuisance, public safety impacts. Before I get started, because there is so much information here, and I'm not going to bore you guys by going through all of it. That's why I gave you the packets. You're intelligent individuals. You can go through it. You're going to be making your own decisions to begin with. I would like to read something to you, and what it does is it kind of defines what it is that I'm going to say to you. And it is a quote by Aldo Leopold. "A thing is right when it tends to preserve the integrity, stability, and beauty of the biotic community. It is wrong when it tends otherwise." And I could basically put every single one of the negative impacts, or at least our perceived negative impacts, into that framework. Because not only are we talking about an ecosystem, number one, it's a very small estuary, but we are talking about a complete ecosystem. I heard a lot of people talking about the Brant geese. There was some very good information there. But we're also talking about an entire ecosystem, all of the biotic community. And not only are the Brant geese affected, but the entire ecological area is affected by this. And that includes human beings. So what I would like to do, and I'm going to be kind of sort of backtracking a little bit, is I would like to give you my perspective on the estuary. And if you could go ahead and focus on the map again. Because here's my background. I live on the Morro Bay Estuary, and I actually live on the estuary. I live on my boat. I have a tour business, and I am a naturalist. I am literally on that estuary a good 300 days a week. I live straight across from the grass islands, and I'm very aware of what goes on during hunting season, before and after. And I do have, as a naturalist, and I do have a biology background, and have worked with animals. I've been a wildlife rehabber for years. I have a tendency to watch animals' behaviors, what's happening, not only the way that I impact them, but the way that other people do impact them. And what I would like to show you is I'm not necessarily saying somebody's lying, but I would like to refute a little bit of information here.
May I ask a question, please?
Yeah.
Sure. You said you're a naturalist. Mm-hmm. Are you a professional naturalist?
Well, if you consider being a guide, a professional naturalist, and somebody that has studied wildlife biology and been a wildlife rehabber, I guess you could call me a professional naturalist. What is a professional naturalist?
Well, there's a good definition for that, but you called yourself a naturalist. I was wondering what your credentials were.
My credentials are, I do have a biology and a formal biology background, but my credentials as a naturalist are somebody that has worked with wildlife for most of my life. I've been a guide on and off for a very long time, and I'm extremely familiar with the ecosystem. I do a lot of volunteer work for the National Estuary Program and work with those individuals on a very close basis. So my perception of the grass islands and some of the reasons for eliminating the grass island and for reduction of days are going to be a little bit different than the way they perceive it. As far as the estuary goes, there are several different locations that we have people launching, and this is primarily kayaks, fishermen, people that are utilizing, recreational users of the bay. We have people launching from the back of the bay in this area right in here. We have people launching from the State Park Marina, as Gene Joy has mentioned. But what they haven't mentioned is that we have a whole variety of businesses that are launching people up here on the Embarcadero. And we also have residential areas. We have a whole area over in here where kayaks, canoes, people are launching their sailboats, etc. So we have people launching from a whole variety of places. But what's really interesting is this grass island, besides the fact that it draws a tremendous amount of wildlife, and it is absolutely crucial for gridding for the brant geese, there does, and I have eelgrass maps to show you. It is actually ringed by eelgrass. So there are feeding opportunities for brant geese and for other wildfowl there. But the main reason why we are asking for this to be eliminated is because it is a hub, quite literally a hub of activity. We have people coming from the back bay. And one of the reasons why I know about this is because I also happen to manage the State Park Marina, and through a hunting season, and I've had opportunity to really see what kind of traffic there is, what people's reactions to hunting are, etc. And during hunting season, which is November, December, January, this is a prime recreational time. It is during the migration. People come there to look at the wildlife, to view the birds. It also happens to be Thanksgiving, Christmas, and the Winter Bird Festival. So you have a lot of usage at this particular time. And one of the places that people love to go to is the grass island. They will actually literally come up from Los Osos, over from the State Park Marina, and I will tell you, from managing the State Park Marina and launching all those kayaks, the majority of the time, those people, because this is a pretty decent paddle and a lot of them aren't really strong paddlers, will go around the corner for the grass islands. If there is enough water, which is generally 2.5 feet and above, they will go around, circumnavigate, and it's just a cool place to be. So it draws people. It just does. It's one of the most favorite places. And then all the people coming down from, if they're not going to go up to the rock, what they're going to do is they're going to head across because it's real narrow, and they come down and around through this cove, and they like to circumnavigate once again. So it is highly used by both wildlife and by human beings, especially during that period of time. We have resident flocks of pelicans, white pelicans that hang out here. It is just incredible, the diversity of wildlife that utilizes those grassy islands during the migration. So you've heard a couple of reasons why, very strong reasons why, the grass island should be eliminated from hunting territory. What I am asking is very specifically, there is a point. Could you go back to it just one more time? There is a point, and this would be the easiest way. Fairbank Point is right here. That is in just south of Fairbank Point. Your line delineates. It goes across here, half of the grass islands. And I do not necessarily agree with exactly where this line is, by the way. And I have taken a look at a lot of old maps. You do have a map in your packets, by the way, that was put out by the National Estuary Program that I believe to be a little bit more accurate. And but what we are asking is there's a point here, Fairbank Point, and just north of the State Park Marina, you have a deep water channel that goes across here. And this is really important for the hunters to be able to access. If you were to go from White Point due west right here to this bulge, you have that would very effectively eliminate the grass islands, and it would still allow the access of these eelgrass beds in here, along in here, and the deep water channel that allows them to access the sand spit on the east side. And that is prime hunting habitat for these guys. So that would be a really good, a very effective way. It's really easy for people to mark it, and that is my suggestion.
Did you say that you manage a marina?
Yeah. Not anymore, but I used to.
But around the grass islands at low tide, what's the water depth normally there?
Well, you know, as these guys have said, it's very tidally dependent. It can go anywhere from right now. Last night we had a high tide of 7 foot, and we had a negative tide of negative 1.8. It goes anywhere in between, and you know whether or not it's a neap tide, et cetera. But on an average, around those grass islands, in order to be able to access or to circumnavigate at least, you need at least 2.5 feet of water. And you know, and then you're really scraping bottom. So it's very tidally dependent. But I would say a very good portion of the time you have access to that area, other than on the extreme low tides.
2.5 feet of water around the island would relate to what state of tide?
Well, you know, if I brought a tide book, it's so variable in the estuary because you have so many tidal mudflats and you have such a variance and you have deep water channels that you have access to at any tide.
No, I understand that, but if you have a it's actually a direct relationship if you're aware of the technology. You know, a state of tide produces X amount of over a certain given bottom. So my question was, are you aware of what the 2.5 feet that you're talking about, how does that relate to what state of tide is the question? And I guess you don't know that.
Well, the two and a half, you know, if you're talking about time and the amount of time, what percentage do you have at least that much water? I'd say, you know, a good, at least during the times when people are kayaking and utilizing it, you're looking at least half of the time. Because those extreme tides, a good portion of the time, right in between the extremes, you will have flat tides anywhere right, 2.5, 3.5, and then it goes up and it goes down depending on what time of month it is. But a good portion of the time you have that much water. I addressed some of the biological issues and some of the economic issues, and that's just with grassy islands. The public safety issues are these. There has been a tremendous change in the population. My sister and brother lived there. My brother is a fisherman in Morro Bay. Things have changed a lot, and it's not just the population change. What it is a change in usage. There has been a tremendous increase in recreational usage of all forms. I would have to say there's probably been a drop in hunting usage, at least according to the Black Brant Group. There are probably no more than 50 to 100 hunters that utilize that area. A good portion of them are locals. So what you have, and people have asked me, well, how can you call this a compromise? I can easily call it a compromise, and I call it a very generous compromise in that you have literally 50 to 100 hunters. They have hunted there for generations, and I respect that. It is their heritage. It is their tradition. You have over 25,000 locals, and these are locals that are asking for change, and some of them are asking for some pretty drastic changes. A compromise is generally something where you find middle ground. These guys want to hunt every day. These people over here that represents a huge portion of the population doesn't want hunting at all. What we are advocating for is truly a compromise. The reason why we're asking for 3 days a week, number one, it's not precedent setting. There are national wildlife refuges that have 3 to 2 days a week. Why we are asking for this is this. Number one, we have incompatible usage. Whether or not it's the kayakers and the fishermen's fault, and by the way, this isn't just about kayakers. We have hikers on the sand spit. We have people that are utilizing, that are viewing. The one thing that they didn't tell you, all along that coastline, besides the fact that we have a campground, I'm going to point out, we have a campground, we have a marina, we have boats.
You got it.
Oh, okay. We have boats throughout, on moorings throughout this entire area. Some of these in this area are illegal, but they're still there. That's a fish and game issue. You guys are going to have to deal with that. I don't even want to touch it. Bottom line is, there's a bunch of boats
that's
in there.
The one you ought to be
going. I want to ask you something. I want to ask you something about earlier testimony we had. You say you live on a boat, right? Point to the area where you live on your boat again.
I live on a boat. Boy, this is really hard to see.
There's a pointer there. Let her point with that pointer right there. She can't see that far. Right there. We can see it right there fine.
I live right about here.
And then, okay, I can't imagine what it'd be like living on a boat, but...
She has a boat. I've been on a boat. No offense.
He lives on a boat.
I just want to ask, you say that you come from a hunting and fishing family.
Yeah.
And you've been there how many years?
I've been here for 5 years. I grew up...
I got to ask you this, because the gentleman earlier said that there's 400 yards from where your boat is to where the shooting is. And have you ever personally had any kind of a problem with the hunters hunting there that really was worthwhile for this kind of an effort that you have personally
you really
witnessed?
You want to ask me that question? Darn tootin'. Yeah, I have, because I am out on that estuary so much, I have seen a whole variety of non-game birds shot, and so have wildlife biologists. You have that information in your packet. Wildlife, rehabbers, etc. I have seen non-game birds shot. I have caught guys poaching, but because I am out on my kayak and I can't get back quick enough, I have seen guys out there hunting on the grass island and that have literally gotten in people's faces. Some of these folks, I cannot attribute all the blame to these guys. We have people, because there is so little signage out there and there is so little information for people to glean what they should do, whether or not they're out there kayaking, how far they need to stay away from people, there is definitely an educational process that needs to happen. And I would like to be part of that, as, you know, I'm on the Harbor Advisory Board. I am a volunteer for the NEP, and I think that that needs to happen on both sides. But absolutely, I've had some real problems out there, and this is what started the process. This was not something when I got there, I was just astounded that such a small estuary with so much recreational usage and such incompatible usage was still allowing hunting.
Let me ask you this. Can you put the map back up, please?
And leave it up.
Just leave it up.
Just leave it up.
Thank you.
The eastern portion that is shut off.
Right here.
Yeah.
So you're talking about
all the where
salt
the,
marsh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are the kayakers using that?
They don't use it very much, and I would like to actually.
I mean,
what is the I'd like to give you a little.
Okay,
bit
hold on. No, let me finish.
Okay.
What is the function of the sea kayakers? Are they out there to see the birds? Are they out there just to kayak on the water? I'm curious as to, you know.
The majority of the people, especially the people that come back into this back area, because it's quite a long kayak,
uh-huh.
and you have to be pretty motivated to do it. They're coming back there for wildlife viewing.
Okay.
Primarily.
Okay. So when I'm out there and I'm hunting off of grassy, mm-hmm. like I did this last year, most of the brants that I saw, most of the birds that I saw flew into the closed area, into the estuary there. Now, I don't have the ability to go in there.
Right.
Unless I go and want to go bird watching.
Well, and it depends on the
But
time
there were hardly any birds out there where I was at. Occasionally a raft of brants would fly over, some pelicans, which are not legal.
Let me ask you this. How many days did you hunt?
2 days.
Okay. Well, hunting season and their migratory pattern keeps them there for a long time.
Sure. They go in, they go out. I mean, the whole idea is they mm-hmm. come off, they'll fly over us, and hopefully we'll decoy them in or call them in and mm-hmm. harvest two birds and then be on our way.
Right.
But I don't understand. For me, if I was a sea kayaker, I wouldn't go anywhere out there. The birds are over in the back area in the closed zone. I would spend most of my time there enjoying the wildlife there.
Actually, there are a tremendous amount of birds back here in the Los Osos Shark Inlet area, back by Cuesta Inlet.
Okay.
A little bit later on in the season, these guys aren't dumb. You know, they start getting shot at in early November. What ends up happening is later on in the season, they start to utilize this area more. And because we do have an eelgrass bed that has gotten considerably healthier in the last few years, I have watched them continue to utilize this area more and more. It's a great gridding area.
Okay.
And these guys aren't hunting there for no reason.
Okay, well then tell me, what happens to the sea kayakers before the season and after the season?
What happens to them?
Yeah. Are they utilizing the bay?
Of course they are. But this is a prime, you know, you have incompatible usage. These guys are hunting migratory game birds for a reason during that period of time.
Right.
It just so happens that that's the prime season for people that are there to wildlife view to see the critters
right.
that they want
but
to see.
They're not, but they still have the ability to view wildlife there, just not, or, I mean, if they want to, they can certainly go out there mm-hmm. While folks are hunting or after folks get off the water and they're done hunting. They still have that ability to go and recreate the way they choose.
So
my point is that we're talking about a short period of time that this sort of incompatible use takes place.
A three-month period of time, yes.
Well, black brant hunting is typically 30 days.
Yeah.
There, and you have to agree that duck hunting is not not as popular as black brant hunting. Would you agree?
I would agree to that, but the reality is, and number one, there are a few things about brant hunting, at least from this year and the last couple of years, because I've been watching and I've been tracking. This year, there was not a single day that there was not a brant hunter out during brant season. But I would like to make it perfectly clear that we keep focusing in on the brant, but this is a much larger issue than just brant. It's a much longer season with the ability for these guys to be able to hunt 7 days a week from 8 o'clock to sunset. And I would like to remind you that during the winter...
But kayakers get to utilize seven days a week?
Absolutely, but kayakers...
Dusk till dawn?
The migratory period only lasts a certain point of time. This also happens to be Thanksgiving, Christmas, Winter Bird Festival. There are thousands, literally thousands of people that are locals that utilize it, and there are another several thousand people that come into
can
the
you
area,
give me,
which brings
can,
me to the
Can you give me numbers
aspect.
Of sea kayakers on any given day? How many?
No, I can't.
No
give
statistics?
Exact.
Well,
and why are you making this an issue just about kayaking?
Well, okay, I'll include canoeists, I'll include boaters, mm-hmm. I'll include people that want a hike around. Everybody.
There are times during that 3 month period where I have actually rented out every single kayak and almost every single canoe, and all of the other vendors have done the same. So we have very heavy usage at particular times, and it's quite light at others. There's also the Winter Bird Festival, and that brings in people from all
over. What are the dates of the Winter Bird Festival?
And the Winter Bird Festival is in January. So, which brings me to the economic issue. And I would have to say, from the city standpoint, public safety is a concern. We actually do have people, and you have letters in there, that have reported shot spraying around their kayaks. We do have people that have reported that live along the back bay that have damage done to their property, and that is in that packet also. We have pictures of non-game birds shot floating up in people's yards, etc. That's part of your package also. So there are some safety concerns, and these guys are as safe as they possibly can be And I absolutely 100% believe that. But when you have an increasing incompatible usage, then there are more opportunities for unsafe things to happen. So that brings me to one of the other reasons why we're asking for a three-day season. We have fish and game wardens there that are stretched to the max. They have very little presence on the estuary, and it's I don't believe that it's through any of their fault, but they don't. I saw very little presence this year. And we have a lot of people that don't understand the issues between hunting and kayaking. What it does is it gives us several different choices. This gives these guys still the ability to hunt during that time frame, and it gives non-consumptive users the choice. And a lot of people are incredibly unnerved by going out on the estuary when people are hunting. It's scary for most folks if they don't understand hunting. It gives them the choice to be able to go out and hunt. Gives them the choice to be able to go out and engage in their non-consumptive use of that estuary without having to be out on the water while these guys are hunting. And really, honestly, I think some of these guys think some of the kayakers are ever-loving pain in the fanny, and they really don't want them around either. So if these people have a choice, they're generally going to make it. And what I've asked for is two weekdays and Sunday. And the reason being is Saturday is the highest usage day for kayakers and non-consumptive visitors. So if these guys have Sunday and two weekdays, and the rest of the people, and we'll have it posted in the kayak shops around town, et cetera, yeah. They have an opportunity to go out and to not get in these guys' faces and to not have to engage in what it is that they love to do, which is non-consumptive, then it gives everybody choices.
Everything's consumptive, ma'am.
I have a question.
Commissioner Rogers.
One quick question. Do you have any experience with any, you were talking about shot raining down around kayaks, which mm-hmm. leads one to think that the kayak was in relatively close proximity, because being a hunter, I know how mm-hmm. far bird shot goes or doesn't. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of any incident where an activist kayaker may have knowingly interfered with a hunter? Any incident at all?
I know personally I have never done that.
No, I didn't say that. Are you aware? You ever heard of any really, that ever happening?
No. As a matter of fact, I have not. I have never talked to anybody that has purposely interfered. What I have seen, or because, you know, these guys sometimes are hunting from the eastern shore of the Sandspit, and they can become, you know, quite camouflaged. And some of these people have unknowingly, you know, passed in front of them. And once again, because it's not not at the top of people's mind or mindset, that they'll be paddling by these guys and they don't even realize that they're out there to hunt. So therein lies the problem. Like I said,
I understand that. My question was related to a different mindset.
No, absolutely not.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
None. Okay. Mr. Joy,
I think
we'd
beat this horse to death.
Okay. Thank you. And the one thing that I did want to let you know is I have over 2,000 petition signatures, and this is asking for the compromise position. These are the originals. I would turn them into you and ask that they please be kept safe and that I could have them at a later date.
Once they are turned in, they become part of the rulemaking file, and they will not be returned.
So why don't we just accept the information?
No, we need the petitions.
You need to make copies. Give us copies.
Well, all right. Well, then what I'll do is I'll make sure that they get sent to you and that you have that on file.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there any other information that you need from me?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, come on back up if you want. We'll wrap this up.
Thanks.
How many more items do we have after this? One more item? What do we have after this?
Thanks. Thank you very much.
20, huh?
That's the laser pointer.
Just leave it on the podium. There you go.
Gene Joy from San Luis Black Brat Group again. I was interested. I heard these comments, and I happen to have a piece of paper in my truck out there that I had. And I'd just like you to take a look at it, because I hear this compromise. And on this, if you read the top of it, on my pointer, back a little bit so I can see the top. This says Chair Mandy Davis, and it says Environmental Subcommittee Report. Reading here, the city will seek additional ways to support Winter Festival. The city will actively advocate a ban on the hunting of waterfowl in the estuary.
That's not what they decided to do. Yeah, go ahead.
The thing is, what's it say there? Who's the chair of this Environmental Subcommittee Report?
And then they came to the compromise position, is what I was told.
This report was issued after that.
The city council member knows.
Go to the microphone.
Yeah. It's irrelevant.
This is appears to be from our 2020 Vision Committee, where we had a citizens committee who looked at all areas of city life and where the city wants to be in 20 years. And one of the areas they looked at was the environment. These two items did not come before the city in our packet. They were in the subcommittee level, and they came to the committee. They had to have a two-thirds vote to come to the city council, and it did not make that. You know something more than I know.
No, it's just okay. A process, as I understand it, and it changed when it got to the
city. No, I'm not. I got people raising their hand to combat what you're saying, and I'm not going to go there. We're going to shut off debate right now.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I was just had this paper. I just wanted clarification.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion that we go to notice for intent to publish.
Hold on. I have a question. Right now, what we have before us is an intent to go to notice for the August meeting, right?
That's the only action that we need to take today.
But what if we wanted to include these people's recommendations? Do I have to make a motion to ask the department to come back with us, come back with recommendations to go to notice on this, and we do have to vote on that? I mean, I'm wanting to take some action on what these folks have brought forward today. I don't know if the commission wants to agree with me on that, but I don't want to ignore it and go, here's what I'd like to do, and you tell me if I'm doing it legally. What we have before us is an intent to go to notice on the migratory waterfowl regulations. The City Council of Morro Bay sent us a letter asking for a change in those regulations to have 3 days and a restriction on times and things like that. If we were to include those, do I have to make a motion? I'm asking for legal help here. Do I have to make a motion to go to notice on an amendment to the to the waterfowl regulations, or do
yes,
I just?
Yep.
Okay. I would like to make a motion to amend the waterfowl regulations as presented to us to include the recommendations in the letter sent to us by the City of Morro Bay, which delineate the different things that might need to be done. Excuse me?
Are you specifically talking about moving the boundary?
Moving the boundary and designating the days.
2 days, okay.
Okay, so I would like to make that motion to make that amendment to the notice.
Discussion, Mr. President?
I'm forced to entertain his motion, but I need a second before my discussion.
May I ask a question prior to that? My understanding is that would be, if that were to be included, that would be a way to get the department's recommendation and to notice for the general public.
It would be an addition to the department's recommendation.
Right.
It would as a consideration for us to consider for adoption and
understand
August.
That would give us a fuller would it not give us a fuller recommendation from the department with respect to the effects on the proposed amendment.
Yes, it would.
I'll second.
Sankey, do you have?
Yeah, depending on the nature of the motion, some of the interest in changing some of these rules are not in the section currently open. And so if you go, you'd be asking us to open another section, going to notice to our wildlife area regulations, where some of these rules reside.
Okay.
They're not in the current package.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. So legally, it would take care. It would be part of the current package and an amendment to a few of the other regulatory areas that you would come back with us in August and tell us what you think about all that and what we should do on that.
Yes.
And the public could comment once again in San Luis Obispo. So we're not voting today to. If we accept this motion I'm making, to accept the motion, we're asking you guys to come back with us with recommendations to notice it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other...
That's what you seconded.
...comments from the commission?
No.
Michael?
You know, I just want to suggest that I may be abstaining here. I'm feeling a little uncomfortable with this subject matter, not having had time to come up to speed with it. I'm very sympathetic to both sides and realize that there's been a lot of compromise, at least on the one side. I'd like to hear a little more on the compromise from the recreational users as well, but I'll have a little more time to study this before the August meeting.
Totally understandable.
Okay.
Totally understandable. I'm going to call for a roll call, Director, on this vote. So we're voting on
my motion,
Commissioner Hathaway's motion.
To go to notice on recommendations from the department, but not on accepting the recommendations. Okay, guys?
All in favor?
Commissioner Hathaway.
Yes.
Commissioner Rogers.
Aye.
Commissioner Flores.
No.
Commissioner Kellogg.
No.
Commissioner Gustafson.
Abstain.
Okay, the motion failed.
Fails.
So now I'll entertain a motion to go to notice with the department's recommendation.
Do we have to, in terms of rolling back the shooting time to...
Yes.
Okay.
That's what we were trying to discuss.
I'll make a motion to list as an option for our August package the ability to hunt... Morro Bay to make it bring it in line with the rest of duck hunting in the state.
I'll second.
Is one of the options for us to have.
We'll be able to come back with.
Okay, I got a motion and a second. Is there anything on discussion?
Well, real quick, it was a compromise made between the Fish and Wildlife Service and the hunters and the Park Service and the community of Morro Bay, and now because you're feeling your oats a little, but you're just going to arbitrarily change that time.
No. There was a compromise made in 1984 when the eastern part of that was open to hunting, and now it's not.
Now there's even more people and more noise intrusion. But anyway.
Anyway, I got a motion and a second. And for fairness sake, I will call for a roll call again.
Commissioner Hathaway?
No.
Commissioner Flores?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
Commissioner Gustafson?
Same.
Commissioner Kellogg?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Now we need to roll.
Now
I need to make a motion to accept the department recommendations for the upcoming waterfowl.
With the amendment?
With the amendment.
Second.
I got a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Now be the order.
Okay. Ooh.
So now I have a question. The waterfowl regulations that will be coming before us at the San Luis Obispo meeting will be as presented without the recommendations of Morro Bay folks. Sure. But they still have every right to show up and talk about how we might want to amend them or change them. So this is not the last that we need to hear from them. If they really are concerned about this, the meeting's going to be held in your backyard in August.
Well, that's not exactly correct, because this is not an option that's open for further discussion and consideration for adoption.
What if the commission decides to do that?
Well, you can do that, but we would not be able to adopt any regulations at that time. You probably would not be able to adopt any changes made at that time.
We'd have to push it back to September and notice.
Probably November.
Okay. All I'm saying is we had a new commissioner that said she abstained, and I'm not speaking for her, based on more information needed, and we're adopting this package in August. If more information is presented, we might have another vote. I'm just wondering about that.
Yeah. You know, I feel the need to abstain on
one,
Bob. I wasn't even planning on attending because
I
had high school graduation yesterday, and it was my first meeting. I thought I'd better get here and hear the discussion today.
I understand.
Because I understand the critical nature of the August issues, so I'm uncomfortable.
No, I totally understand why you would abstain today.
This.
I totally understand. I mean no disrespect in bringing that up. I'm just not wanting to close the door on this, obviously, and want further discussion. And if the door is closed for legal reasons, let me know. But if there's still an option of having the good folks of Morro Bay, both the hunting community and the other recreational users, coming before us again, because we're going to be in their town, I'm just asking.
In reality, Bob, we can't drag it out till November meeting because the regular duck season is going to be open by then. So we got to be right about.
Okay, we'll have to be next year then. Okay, thank you.
Next item.
Next item is item 17, and it's a request for authorization to publish notice for commission intent to amend sections 163 and 164 and to add 163.1 to Title 14 California Code of Regulations regarding the commercial herring fishery and harvesting of herring eggs on kelp. Commissioners have a copy of the department's proposals, which includes a 2-inch mesh size as requested by the commission last year. We have no individuals here to provide comments on this proposal. The department is available to answer any questions if you have any. If not, a motion would be in order to authorize your staff to publish notice.
And I'll make that motion that we authorize staff to publish notice.
I'll second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Sorry.
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? No. Ayes have it. Now be the order.
Our next item is item 18. It's also a request for authorization to publish notice of commission intent to amend section 401 of Title 14 California Code of Regulations regarding issuance of permit to take animals causing damage. This proposed change is to update our depredation regulations found in section 401. As the commission is aware, the statutes were changed to include wild turkeys as animals that could be included under our depredation regulations. This proposed change is to take care of some minor editorial changes, plus to add wild turkeys to section 401.
And I'll move that we authorize staff to go to notice.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Now be the order.
Okay, that brings us to the consent calendar.
I'll move consent.
Item 19, I believe, will be withdrawn at this time. The department still is in the process of trying to collect information on whether or not fish are migrating up above the dam through the new fish ladder. So we'll withdraw item 19 from consideration. That means items 20 through 30, your staff recommends approval.
Move consent.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it. Now will be the order.
That's it. Okay. Our last item, then, is announcement of future meetings. We have the August 18th, 19th meeting in San Luis Obispo. And then you have September, November, and December meetings for the rest of the year. As we discussed yesterday, I'd like, if possible, some dates for our special meetings to receive public comments on the draft master plan framework for the MLPA program, and also to receive public comments on the draft abalone recovery and management plan.
Okay. All right. Where were we last on that, Bob?
We were July 12th. It's also a Blue Ribbon Task Force meeting in Santa Barbara, July 11th and 12th. That evening, late afternoon evening, would be our first meeting in Santa Barbara.
And, Richard, you're doing that one, right? Okay.
And I'm going to make that, too.
Okay.
Okay, and then July 19th in Oakland.
I'll be at that one.
Be late afternoon and evening.
Yeah, Hattori said he'd be there, too.
Okay, so that then that rolls us to August, right? Because we've got WAFA in between.
Well, some of us, we were trying to tentatively set up a meeting in Santa Rosa, either the 25th or 26th of July. I know some commissioners will be out of state.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. That's July. I'm in the wrong month, aren't I? July. The next week is 4th of July? Mm-hmm. Where are you at the end of July, right?
End of July.
Okay. Is Pert here?
Yeah.
What were those dates for those hearings in Sacramento? Did we have first week of August?
No.
Okay. All right. We do Santa Rosa. Okay. First week in August? Or the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th? Santa Rosa? Is that where your next venue is?
Well, it doesn't matter. Whatever's convenient for the commissioners, we're looking at Santa Rosa, Eureka, and San Diego.
Yeah, and I said I would do Eureka and San Diego. You want to do, Richie, you want to do Santa Rosa? Not really?
San Diego.
I can do.
Me and Cindy can do Santa Rosa. When you,
I'll have
when
to you do it. You can do Santa Rosa?
Well, I don't know yet until we get the date.
I can do Santa Rosa with Cindy.
Okay. Yeah, Mike and Cindy can do Santa Rosa.
The first week in August, Bob. For Santa Rosa.
How about San Diego?
After that.
8th, 9th, 10th, 11th.
9th is great.
Roll the next week. God, you guys are so... Give us some time in between, Bob.
10?
Well, my calendar here is goofy. Okay, let's do Santa Rosa. What date?
August 1st, 2nd, 3rd?
No, week after that.
August 8th, 9th, 10th,
okay.
11th, 12th?
Can you make
that's
those
fine. Yeah, those fine.
Yeah,
we do a late afternoon and evening.
Thursday the 8th?
Monday the 8th.
Monday the 8th? Where am I? Oh, that's September.
August.
Okay. Oh, I see. I see where you want to go. Hold on, I have something.
Because I thought you had...
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I was thinking...
He was in the
wrong I was on the wrong month.
Yeah, so
okay.
So
August 4th. August 4th.
August 4th?
Yeah. Hold it. I got to put that in. You're way ahead of me. What are we calling this? MLPA?
Mm-hmm.
NARMP.
And that's in Santa Rosa. Okay, got it.
Okay, so San Diego.
The 11th? I don't want to do it on a Friday. That's a Friday. I don't want to do a Friday. I guess. Let's make it a Tuesday. Let's make it a Tuesday. Because
the commission.
That's right, and we were looking at. And we're looking at the 17th as a possible Marine subcommittee.
How about on the 24th? The date, make it 3 days? Do we want to? I'm wrong. I got to go back to my calendar.
18, 19.
Oh, and SLO, huh?
And actually,
it would have to be the 16th, I think, is the only day to do San Diego.
Okay.
Okay. We're going to do Eureka?
Eureka.
Yeah, we got to do Eureka. See, that's why I say, you know, we're just trying to jam these all in. It's just, well, it's just, you know, it's just not reasonable for us to try to cram in what MLPA, the Blue Ribbons, had a year to do in 2 months. So, and trust me, the secretary and a few other folks can wait until another month or two to for us to take a position on this.
Well, we have to let them know basically now if we're going to delay. No,
That was my suggestion because.
Thank you.
You don't.
Okay.
No. No, our job is to take it to the public up and down the state. And we can't, you know, that's one area that's it eventually down the road is going to be severely impacted by this. So, yeah, so why would we not go there?
So the schedule for Eureka, you're feeling you can't do another one in August. Is there a chance in July?
I wanted to do a San Diego and Eureka one too because we would left out the both ends of the spectrum out of the hearing process. So,
well, we've got San Diego. It's Eureka.
There's the week of July 25th or the week of August 8th.
No, that's not going to work. We got to go into the last week in August, September.
You've already said that it's going to be on the agenda in August, right?
No.
Yes, we have.
Well,
we've noticed it.
Bob, whose timetable is this?
Ours. We put it
this
on
was
agenda.
Not our timetable. It was the director and the secretary that came to us a year ago and said, this is the timetable. So we're adopting their schedule and not adopting our schedule. Now, either we are the Fish and Game Commission or we're somebody else's commission. I don't know. Well, then it's our timetable.
Michael, when the research parents
going to one of them,
it's important.
Director, come to us and ask us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I clearly.
The Blue Ribbon panel has had a year to go through this, Bob.
I know. And we're having here.
So we should have ample time.
You're opposed to the whole system.
No, I'm not opposed. No, I'm not foot dragging on this.
We're trying to have hearings before a notice.
You know, Bob, if you would participate in some of these hearings, then maybe we could get them done in time.
You know that I can go to because I was having.
Well, Bob, there have been several hearings throughout this past year.
Yeah, let's try.
Come on.
Not things that we should be doing.
Is there any chance August 8th, 9th, we had talked about, did I miss that we...
No, we already have. We already have. We already have one then.
No, we don't.
We just
what is it?
We have July 12th for Santa Barbara, July 19th for Oakland, August 4th for Santa Rosa, August 16th for San Diego. We have nothing scheduled at this time.
Okay, so is it possible more time?
I can go that week. I don't
There's
know.
One.
There's one. I can go to any of those.
Take a day.
Where are we at?
I'm wide open, so whatever.
How about August 9th?
I'm okay.
I'm in Michigan that whole week.
August 9th.
August what city?
9th. Eureka.
August 9th?
It's a Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm free all that week, so.
Okay.
Decide if there's a better
August
time. 9th.
I'm in Michigan that whole week, but I agree with Mike as far as these are our decisions, not nobody else's,
absolutely.
And we should be the ones that... that determine when we're going
to
have.
So why are we stacking these week upon week upon week? That's my point. And if we have the ability to take a little bit more time and go through this process, we ought to do that. What's a month's delay?
Nothing. No.
What's 2 months' delay when we're making such a huge step? You know, here's my point. Is you guys weren't here, and we went through this when we did Channel Islands, and we got roasted over it. okay? And I want to make sure that we have as much public over doing Channel Islands the way we did it.
Not having enough public input and hearings.
Okay.
Which is why...
That's right, but, you know, that's what's going to happen this time. If we go through this process and we don't go up and down to these cities and we don't take our time and deliberate this and make a, you know, what I think is a reasonable decision, okay, that, you know, that's fine, Richard. I just...
I'm sorry, I don't mean to...
Well... It's just... I can't participate in all that I'd like to, all right? And I don't think it's fair that we have a meeting on a Tuesday and come back and do another meeting on Thursday, and then we have to take all of this in and then come up with a decision. And we're under a not a self-imposed time frame. This was something that was recommended by the secretary and the director. It was their idea. They're the ones that are pushing this. So I want to take a little bit more time, and if it means we have to delay it a month or two, so be it. Just as long as we come up with the right decision, and it's perceived that we took as much public input as possible. That's my point. Okay? And it's sort of a rush to judgment here.
That's, no, wait. Add one thing.
I know you don't see it that way, but you weren't here, and I was, and that's we will get lambasted on.
No, commissioners, can I just say one thing? The recommendation by the secretary and the director was made to us also with a parallel course of action by the Blue Ribbon Commission. We put it on our agenda for August, and at that time had two public hearings scheduled. This commission decided, in order to bring in more public testimony, to now have five public hearings. That's what makes the squeeze, not because we're trying to rush to judgment, but we've added three additional public hearings. But I don't feel squeezed by going to the commission hearings that I can go to and having other commissioners with, you know, good judgment going to other ones. We're going to five different places in the state between now and August. That's all I'm saying. If we couldn't have made the August deadline to have those five hearings and we wanted to postpone until September, I would accept that. But we can make the five hearings in August, so why not do them is all I'm saying. Yeah. Why spread them out just to spread them out?
And let me understand. The public hearings are we're gathering
information.
It's a forum for the public to come to. Right.
No, it's and just so let them come and talk to us.
The two of us will be dealing with that. We'll just
we don't have to vote.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're just receiving public comment.
So it's because we added five that the squeeze is on, not because we're trying to rush to judgment.
It's an opportunity for us to hear for ourselves instead of just taking the Blue Ribbon Task Force word for it.
Okay.
And the public coming back and saying, well, you just rubber stamped the department and the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and you're the decision-making body.
Well,
if we're
going to
be responsible.
That's absolutely.
The public will have plenty of notice to get to these meetings.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely
the more important part, that the public has that adequate notice to get to the meetings.
It's a squeeze for us, but not for the public. They're a one city. I mean, you know what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's mute now, and they got the date.
Okay.
So. You got your dates?
Yep.
Yeah.
I'll try to get to all of them.
And we have commissioners scheduled for each date. Yeah. Is that right? Okay.
Commission meetings adjourned.
That's easy.
You have a good safe trip home.
I'm staying here all night.
Oh. Remember to stop at that fish hatchery.
I'm going to. I'm going to start at the Mount Whitney one. I'm going to stop at Manzanar, so I want to see what we did to our Japanese market.
You feel okay with that? I feel like they're going to target me now for
what time is it? 11? Oh.
Thank you.
This is from... No, we realize that.
No, the framework, though.
It's framework. It's going to be
framework is coast-wide.
August 16th, I believe.